Hi, so I'm going to talk about prescriptive management. We've already used this term in some talks already. So at the moment, so far we've just talked. Right. Has this got a pointer? No. Have we got any pointers? Has this got a pointer on it?
Yes.
It's weedy, is it?
Working.
Very weedy. All right. So far today we've talked largely about LCFG core. So in a very minimal sense, isn't quite true. But it's... that's a very useful thing. I'll try not to... scrape the wall.
That's for the troublemakers.
Yeah, I've got quite a long reach, so if I want to wake someone up... So, we've been talking about the LCFG core. It works good. Unfortunately, it's not... it doesn't copy this mirror and that wall. So I'm going to talk about prescriptive management, which is more than just the core. This is... we want the whole machine managed by LCFG. So that includes things on top of the core, like being to boot a machine. And it's such that the boot mechanism is actually configured by LCFG. Various components. Now, Stephen's already touched on some of these components. And I don't think there's actually 50 runs in every single machine, 50 components. I think there's probably a set of 50 components in existence. And here comes Kenny to go and prove me wrong. This is too heavy. I'm too weedy. Software package management to manage the package set. I'll go into that in a minute. And automated machine installs so that you can just plonk a CD in a machine, create your LCFG profile, hit return, and your machine installs. And I'll be showing you that later on, but not a complete machine install because it would take rather a long time. 49. Well, it shows you how much I know. Is that in every machine?
That's the server.
The server. Oh, that's in the server. So that's a set of components.
That's what Dresden's got.
That's not a client.
The machine's in here,
40
components.
40 components. Right. So on top of that, of course, there's the configuration data. Sorry, software packages that makes up your machine. And the configuration data, and that's basically, I suppose it includes the set of software packages, but also includes all these resources we've been talking about for every single machine, the type of machine. Right, so, am I pressing the wrong button? That's it. getting some music. LCFG is layered. Originally, when we first did LCFG, it was just done for informatics, or computer science in the old days. It was very difficult for anybody else to take it upstream, because it was all the configuration for individual machine, for individual components, was it mingled in with stuff that was, some of it was generic to LCFG, some of it, sorry, any LCFG site, was all intermingled with stuff that was basically our policies of how we should run machines. And that's been probably one of the biggest barriers, because LCFG is now 13 years old. At least in Linux it's 10 years old, and I think that was probably the biggest barrier for anybody else to take it on. So about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe not quite as long ago as that, we decided to introduce a layered model for the platforms, and that's configuration data and the packages. So there's a thing called the base LCFG layer, which underpins every LCFG prescriptive site. In fact, probably actually the core as well. The Edinburgh layer is Edinburgh University's layer, and a thing called the DICE layer, that's our informatics managed platform. That inherits the Ed layer, which inherits the base LCFG layer. I'll be demonstrating this in a wee while. And the School of Electrical Engineering, or whatever it's called, inherits the Edinburgh layer. And my own domain inherits the LCFG layer. So it's pretty simple layering, which I'll demonstrate in a wee while. So if we go into a bit more detail, so in a standard, one thing I didn't actually mention is the current platforms. We didn't really actually go into that. For LCFG core, there isn't quite a bed of platforms, but it's a relatively wider set of platforms than our prescriptive platforms. We've got things like macOS support in the LCFG core, but I wouldn't ever say that we've got a prescriptive managed macOS platform, though Kenny's working on it. Aren't you? Not fully prescriptive. So our current set of platforms are basically Fedora core-based. So a lot of what we're going to be discussing here is how we configure Red Hat-based platforms. So Fedora Core, Red Hat, or Scientific Linux. So at the moment, all we have is FC3, FC5, and FC6, plus Solaris, but we're intending to introduce a Scientific Linux platform in the near future. Fedora and Red Hat, as well as many Unix distributions, are based on the RC, the System5 RC.init script mechanism. Under our prescriptive managed platform, we have a thing called the boot component, which effectively replaces the script, RC.script mechanism. It starts both LCFG components and the RC scripts, intermingles them in a prioritized way, just like the RC scripts. And it's configured by boot resources. So we've got a resource called boot.services, and here you can see that we've got a DNS component, and we've got a network component, but it's not a network, sorry, it's an RC network, it's just a standard etc. init.d network script, and we've got a syslog component, and as Kenny said, we're not going to have 40 of those, because we're going to have all the RC scripts that we would normally call. The boot component, so this is a typical entry for one component. This describes the run levels at which the syslog component runs at. So a standard Fedora machine will run at a particular run level. It's not like Solaris that will run through the run levels. It jumps straight to a run level. So the syslog component would be run on any of these levels. I suppose it's very much like, in if you look at the init.ds, it's the way you can, the data that you configure chip config with. Start resource for that component indicates the priority number at which it starts, and we'll get into that in a minute and go back to that. And the stop component shows up the priority for that component. Now what it does is when it's starting, I'll explain roughly what the compute component does. When it gets changings from a run level, from one run level to another run level, maybe I'm going into too much great detail here. I'm getting alternate heads here. Basically what it does is it identifies which components should be running at a particular run level. Say where we're going from 283, it would first of all look to see which components it should be not running at level 2 and decide which ones it's going to stop because they're not in level 3. It's not a very good example, but anyway. It would then take a list of all, because it's components that it's going to stop first, it uses that priority number and or it sorts, just like a normal RC would do, and stops those components. And then it then looks at the components that aren't running but need to be running in level 3, and then uses that number to prioritize for each component and prioritizes those to determine which order it starts them. Does that make sense? Right, okay. So this next field here, I'll explain, there are two events that happen for the boot component. you've got a restart event, which is when you're transitioning between different run levels. So a machine, basically when it's booting, is transitioning from, is it zero? Or is it S, I guess? S to straight to 3 if it's a server, or 5 if it's a desktop. So that's restart. Configure is when you get resource changes. Now I'm trying, I'm probably now going to explain stuff that even Paul doesn't know here.
So,
so what you can do is after the number, you can put either of these events, or both these events if you like, to say at which event will it actually start or stop the component. So normally, for the vast majority of components, you put restart in. So at the machine, when the machine goes between run levels, your machine boots, or someone turns it off, or you move from 3 to 5, or 5 to 3, or something like that, it will restart or stop the components. If you put configure at that, it's whenever the resources have changed. It will actually also do that operation if the resources change. So normally, if you add a component to a profile, nothing will happen until you reboot that machine, because it's the restart, because you've moved from one level. But if you put the configure one in, it's as soon as you put the resource into the profile, it will then, or change any boot resource, it will then recalculate and restart that component. So there's an extra one here called the reboot one. Now this means that some components, when they run, they can trigger events. They can trigger things like a reboot. It's probably about all they can trigger. I think there's something else they can trigger, but I can't remember what it is. Anyway, pardon?
Context
changes, that's true. They can flag that, say, update RPMs, which I'm going to come into in a moment, is the package software. Something, when he's installing a bit of software, it decides, well, we actually need to reboot the machine because we've changed the kernel, for example. It can actually trigger a reboot. So what this one does here is, if it looks, this tells you when, what event it will reboot. Sorry, I'm not explaining this very well. So if you've got the syslog component, it says it wants to reboot for some reason. It will only do a reboot if it says restart at an event which is the transition between run levels, i.e. normally a boot. But if you do it in configure, it'll actually do it straight away. So if update RPMs had configure here, for example, in the middle of the night you're running update RPMs, it decided it needed to reboot, it would just do it. I don't think that power has actually been used very often. something missing off the bottom of the slide, unfortunately. What else was I going to say? Now this is obviously based on the rc.script mechanism. FC7 and probably future scientific Linuxes are moving over to a more dependency-based starting mechanism. So I suspect the boot component is not going to last very much longer. It's a rather old component. Some of the events are actually probably historically named. So here's a subset of the components that I worked out which components I reckoned were absolutely the core ones for managing a machine. They probably do obvious things to everybody. So the auth component manages etc. password, etc. group, manages things like the etc. security, so access conf things and things like that, device permissions. Cron obviously manages the cron daemon and allows you to specify add cron tab entries. DNS component, as Paul said, the DNS, well, that is only one DNS component, but it used to be more than one. And the DNS component can do something as simple as just configuring executable-resolve.conf or fully managing a domain. It's a very powerful component. Some would argue too powerful, but I'm not going to make that point because George isn't here. He knows I think it, so on. FizzTab component manages the FizzTab file, but it also partitions disks. GDM obviously manages GDM, Grub, Altgrub. Nothing really exciting. There's no point in going into any great detail there. So I'll go into the package management. So, as I said before, I'm going to concentrate on the Fedora platform rather than the Solaris platform at this stage. So Red Hat and Fedora are largely RPM based. What I'm talking about is our Fedora based prescriptive managed platform. You could use something else if you're a Debian. You could replace the tool I'm about to describe with, well, what's the Debian one? Is it APT? Yeah. But I'm going to talk about our Fedora based tool. So something about our so all we want to do is package manage. We want to be able to specify which RPMs are present on a machine. But particularly in our school in informatics, but this might not apply to everybody, we've got so many machines. We've got so many different. Although we do have huge clusters, we don't want all our machines to be the same. So something that's really critical for us is we want to have potentially want the different set of RPMs on different machines. In 1997, which is how long this software, there was no tool to do this at all in a managed way. It was all done by event-based. Well, I want this installed, I want that not installed, and things like that. Whereas we want to have a list of packages, and what we want to do is give that list to the machine, and the machine then decides whether to install a package, upgrade a package, delete a package, or whatever. So I would put this, why still update RPMs, because I was anticipating a question from certain individuals. Those individuals aren't here. so it's a bit moot point. We're still running update RPMs. We'd rather not, but we'd rather run something like Yum. But a Yum component would be possible to be written, and it could be fed into this infrastructure, but it may meet many sites' needs, but it doesn't meet ours because we want to be able to specify different sets of RPMs and different machines, and the Yum mechanism doesn't allow you to do that. As I understand it, do we actually use any of Yum's configuration data when we were trying to configure our machine?
Well, configuration on the server side.
Configuration on the server side. Yeah. Do we feed it in? And the answer is no. I'll explain in a minute what we do. See if that answers the question. Then you may be able to ask why. So we've got this sort of package specification for how we're doing. Oh, geez. For packages. So what we have is list of packages. And this is the sort of form they take. So we've got a package LCFG client, which is the client component. It's of no architecture. Presume most people understand the RPM. It's a very RPM-ish specification. We're trying to improve it, so it's over the time to make it more platform independent. We've got Bash, we've got glibc, and you can specify the architecture on the package. But also in the package lists, you can specify whether you only want the machine to be installed at boot time, with a colon B, or after the package has been installed or upgraded or something, that you want the machine to be rebooted. That's why I was saying that the update RPMs component can issue triggers. What you can also do is, it's a bit like the component resources, and actually, if I remember rightly, component resources in the old days used to be pluses. Is that right, Paul? Yeah. Right. So So to a certain extent, the syntax dates back to then. So you can override, so if you specify the client component package specification there, you can override it with a plus. What you can also say is, well, I've manually installed this component on this machine, this RPM on this machine, and just ignore it, that version. So the profile.package resource, as Stephen said earlier on, the package manager software, the component that manages the software doesn't hold a resource of which packages are on the machine. It's the profile component, the special profile component, which holds that list. And that's for some performance reasons, which Paul can explain if anybody's interested. So as I say, the list of packages is required as they ship to the machine profile. So this is the way we structure our package repository. And if you were taking LCFG upstream, this is where it is based on, is that we have a per platform repository, and then you might have a base FC5, extras from FC5 or FC6, our LCFG components, and update RPM's code and things like that, and then the updates that come upstream from Fedora. What we also have in the repository are things called RPM headers. The reason for this is if you're deciding which packages to install, and you're trying to work out which dependencies for each of the different packages, if you had to load in all the packages that you're going to install or upgrade, you would have to process either, if you're using HTTP as a protocol to download the packages, you'd have to download the whole package before you could even decide whether you could do it or not, or order the prioritizing the order in which you install the package. So what we have is a thing called RPM headers, which live in the repository with the RPMs, which are basically just the dependency information for each package. I'm not going to go into RPM submit. What RPM submit does is it's a tool for submitting an RPM to the repository, and it generates the RPM headers when it goes into the repository. Packages can be accessed either over a file system, like local or NFS, or more commonly, I think perhaps all sites do this that have used this managed platform, use HTTP. And you can also use a SQLite accelerator if you've got all your RPMs on one repository and you've got 1,000 machines. You don't want all your machines hitting the one web server. So what you can do is put SQLite accelerator in the middle. And we find that maybe two machines is good enough for a site our size. I'm running out of time, so I'm going to skip some of this, I think. So what does it do? I think I've probably explained this already. You feed in a list of packages and an RPM path describing RPM repository. Update RPMs then decides on basis of what's already installed in the machine, what's in the repository, and what's in the package list. It determines whether a package needs to be installed, upgraded, downgraded, or deleted from the machine. And quite importantly, update RPMs isn't based like a lot of the other package managers around there that do their own dependency checking or use RPM as a back end. They actually use RPM minus E or RPM minus I and issue RPM instructions. It actually uses RPM lib itself directly to do any of the dependency checking and the ordering, and to do all the real work. And basically what all update RPMs does is it has a call back from the RPM library, i.e. RPM's base code, to download the packages. But one critical thing that our update RPMs doesn't do, that Yum, for example, would do, is it doesn't automatically satisfy dependencies. So if you had, you wanted to say, well, I've got this base list of packages and I want X in this machine, you couldn't just say plus some X package and expect it to then go and satisfy all the dependencies for that package. You would have to specify all the packages that package depends on in the list. Now, it's all hidden. You've probably got that. It's all done for you, to a certain extent. So what am I going to do now? I'm just going to show you a quick demonstration of adding a package. So this tool called RFE is our way of editing machine profiles. Instead of having to CD, var, LCFG, conf, whatever, we have a tool called RFE. And here's a typical machine profile, which I'll be explaining later on. So in this demonstration, I'm going to add the AUMix RPM, and I'm going to remove any version of Xile that's installed on the machine. And I wait for my profile to be downloaded. And I wait.
So you always specify the version of yourself. You can't just say get latest version.
You can just get latest version. You can specify a star in any of the not the RPM name, obviously. But you can say, right, I want the latest one in the repository, the latest one available.
Does it have support for things like
apps what? So the question was, has it got any support for apps pin priorities, which I'm afraid I don't know what they are. Pardon? Yeah.
In our way of thinking, you explicitly specify most versions.
I think there's a philosophical point here about knowing what it is that you've got installed on the machine. So the idea is that the LCFG profile contains an explicit list of what was installed on that machine, because you want to know when you want to hardwire it. If you want to compute any of that in some way by dependencies or something, then I think our approach would be to do it as a layer above that, where you computed that and then put it in the profile. we do have this wildcard facility that Alistair mentioned, but we're really wanting to deprecate that, because then you have these wildcards in your source on your server, and you don't know what's on the machine. You know, if the machine's turned off, you can no longer tell what's on it. So we want to get this explicit record on the server of what's on the machine, and if you want to generate that in some complicated way, then it's just a text file, you can generate it. So when we do updates, I basically, I would do the updates on one machine, work out the set of changes, and then put them out to all the other machines through our LCFG.
So, update RPMs, if we run it, hopefully it should add AUMix for installing, and flag Xile for deletion. And as long as Condor is not running on that machine again, which is worryingly slow, it should be as slow as that. So we should have AUMix in, and we should have no Xile. So show you something about the dependencies, if I then change that to be what I'm going to do in this example is I'm going to remove Perl, any version of Perl on. Did it come down? Yep. So, yeah. Maybe it hasn't. unfortunately, we're running on the, if you were running on a server on each of your machines, you were running on a server that was dedicated to just doing one machine. The one I'm running it here, the server I've been editing my profile on is home to 1,000 plus machines, so sometimes a few delays. So there you go, he says that I can't remove Perl. Well, it just says there are 2,993 conflicts for Perl, and it actually in the and update RPMs, it will actually give you every single one of them in the log file for that component. Hang on, if you really want them all. That's a bit of an extreme example. I can go back. So that's there's a typical. Oh jeez, I'm going to run out of time very quickly. Here's a real machine in the DICE world. You can see it's a DICE. Arguably, it should be called INF because it's informatics. So for the scriptive managed platform, we've got a sort of convention that the first line is the operating system you're running. The next one is going to be the hardware type. So that's going to specify your module.conf resources, for example. Nowadays, these headers are probably possibly becoming redundant because things like the X3 component works out what's connected. Module.conf, you could do some of that via kudzu. So you could probably have an automated header here, except for those sites are trying to use it for inventory information as well, which is what we do. And there's some more options. I'll show you. I'm not really going to have much time to show you those in any great detail. And a wire it's on. Right, so that's. I'm going to try to work out what I was going to tell you, but show you about that. So what I will show you from there is. Oops. If I go into a simpler domain than the DICE domain, because the DICE domain is rather complicated. I'll do it in the DICE domain. So if I go I'll go into LCFG. So here's a list of the sort of options you might well have at LCFG level. There's quite a lot of them, as you can see. There's no point in going into them in great detail. But there's things like cosine servers, CVS servers, DHCP servers, different types of monitors when monitor auto detection doesn't work, machines that have got UDEV, there's really much time to go into great detail there. So what I will go into next is machine installation. So we have our own machine installation process called the LCFG install route. And basically that's a cut down Linux, a read-only cut down Linux that's usually delivered by CD or DVD or PXE. It could be any bootable media in principle. That consists of the LCFG core plus the components needed to build the target machine. Things like the FISDAB component, the update RPMs component, client component, to install a client profile in the first place. So what the install route does is it builds a self-booting target with a standard set of RPMs. At the time I wrote this, I thought it was 400. I thought it crept up to 400, but it's still around about 300. And this is known as the install base. And that install base is the same for any site. So for us, we've got 1,000 machines. The install base for us is around about is 1,000. Install base is the same across our whole site. And for most sites, they could probably get away with just using the LCFG install base. So then the target boots and update RPMs installs the remaining RPMs. And if it's a standard FC6 machine, it could be something like another 1,500 RPMs, perhaps. Possibly deleting some if they're not actually needed for that particular machine, if they were installed as part of the first stage. So I'm actually going to do a demo of that now, and that's going to be me because I'm running out of time. What do I need to do? We didn't have enough KVM cables, I'm afraid, so you have to do this the hard way. Oops, it was too slow there. So I'm just going to boot over the Pixie. You can see here we've got a choice of operating systems. Well, actually, not really. We've got a choice of three operating systems. Now, the machine, you don't have a choice here about which machine operating system you're going to run. This is basically which install mechanism you're going to run. The operating system that's going to be installed on the machine is actually based from your profile. So your profile will say it's FC5. So if I happen to have my machine set to an FC3 profile, and if I use the FC6 install mechanism, it might work, it might not. Probably won't. Similarly, if I choose one of the 64 install based systems and my machine's actually a target is a 32-bit, you can cause some problems. So I'm going to do FC6. So lots of dots. It's rather overpowering actually looking at it from this distance. So here comes the LCFG install route. Oh! Always takes longer than I think it's going to take. So it's got its. If you don't have a. It's sort of. By default, it relies on you having a DHCP infrastructure. But it also allows you to provide information like its IP address, its host name, and the profile server on a floppy or a USB stick. So we can now install. And I'll quickly try and catch some of the events that are going on. So there it'll have got its profile by now. It's making sure it's got the right time so that RPM installations get the right time for things like that. It's now preparing the disks, so it's now it's already partitioned the disk and it's now making a root file system. It's made other file systems as well rather fast. There it goes and installs. Get 300 RPMs. Now this all this mechanism is all LCFG configurable on a per machine basis. So if you wanted to do something else for per different machine, so you can. While it's doing that, will we ask for questions? That's probably the best thing to do. Has anybody got any questions? Are you all dumbstruck?
You were saying you use RPM min, so you don't use the actual RPM command itself.
The RPM command itself is a wrapper for RPM lib.
Is there any
Well, it's not a wrapper for RPM. RPM is compiled around RPMlib. Yeah. So updated RPMs is at the same level as RPM itself.
And you don't use any safety measurement that you use in your own RPMs?
Sorry?
There's no safety measures built into the RPM command as opposed to your updated RPMs.
In what sense safety measures?
In RPM, if you're using your own RPM, I don't think you can solve fails halfway. Generally mess up the RPM database. Depending how big the install is, the update is affecting the varying levels of disaster.
No, there's no transaction. You're asking if there's any transactional support, basically. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, or any other, is there any kind of gain by using update RPMs or loss by using update RPMs as opposed to...
As opposed to what?
Using the RPM command.
The RPM command? If you were to use the RPM command, you can't specify to RPM command other than through the command line. If you want to say you want to install a whole bunch of RPMs that have got dependencies on each other, the only way you can submit them to RPM, apart from using the RPM library, is through the command line.
Oh yeah. What you're saying,
as opposed to using the RPM command, no.
Update RPMs will fix the database, though, if it gets corrupted.
Oh, yes.
It basically knows it can try its very best to fix it if it does get screwed.
All right, so there it's installed grub on the machine, it's set up the DNS, resolve.conf, and it's going to reboot it itself. It's too quick. Well, there is a single step mode, but I thought that would be far too slow because there's too many storage. It's not auto-detected very well. So this is now installing. This is not installing. This is booting the second stage of the installer. Right. Well, what we're not going to. We're just going to start. Make sure that it starts installing the rest of the RPMs, and that will be us, I think. Is that all the questions? Yeah. You'd have to check the dependencies, the machine itself check. So the question is, you have to work out the dependencies yourself.
Right.
Well, what you can do is you can install an RPM, run update RPMs, it'll tell you what the dependencies are, and then you add things to make.
Wouldn't different machines have different dependencies depending on their configuration?
Would different machines have different dependencies depending on their configuration? Yes.
The dependencies from the package depend on something else, not the set of packages depends on something. So if you're installing a package and you've specified that these are the dependencies, then that same snippet configuration will work anyway, because these are the dependencies.
Well, we want to do that coffee. We'll leave that to coffee. Anyway, so that's it. It's now flagged up. It doesn't say how many at that point. It will later on. It's now checking the dependencies using RPMlib, and it will now install the rest of the RPMs. So there's no point in sitting here watching it.